I call the House Finance Committee meeting to order. Today is Thursday, February 13th, 2020, and the time is 1:39 p.m. Members present is Representative Knopp, Representative Lebon, Representative Telton, Representative Carpenter, Representative Ortiz, Co-Chair Foster, Representative Merrick, Representative Wohl, Representative Josephson, Representative Sullivan Leonard, and I'm Co-Chair Jennifer Johnston. Today's agenda is SB 74, Internet for Schools, plus FY20 Supplemental Budget Overview by the Ledge Finance Division. Today we have a committee substitute for consideration. Representative Foster, can I get a motion to adopt the committee substitute?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move the House committee substitute for committee substitute for Senate Bill 74 Finance, which is 31-LS0600/E for ECHO. Before the committee is our working document.
I'd like to invite my staff member, Aaron Shine, to the table to walk the committee through the CS.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Aaron Shine, and I'm staff to Co-Chair Johnston. The CS before you, version E of SB 74, does two changes. On page 1, line 1, it's an updated title to remove the language and providing for an effective date. As well, it removes section 2 and section 3 in the previous version.
Are there any questions or objections to adopting the committee substitute as our working document? Representative Foster, can I have a motion?
Sure, Madam Chair. I move the House committee substitute for committee substitute for Senate Bill 74 Finance, which is 31-LS0600/E. I move that from committee with the attached fiscal note and individual committee recommendations.
Are there any objections?
Object.
Would you like to speak, Representative Carpenter, would you like to speak to your objection? Are there any other objections? And you maintain your objection? Will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Carpenter.
No.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Knopp.
No.
Representative Lebon.
Yes.
Representative Merrick.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Sullivan Leonard.
Yes.
Representative Tilton.
Yes.
Representative Wohl.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Johnson.
Yes.
9 yeas, 2 nays.
With a vote of 9 yeas and 2 nays, the House committee substitute for committee substitute for Senate Bill 74 Finance has moved from the committee. We'll take an at ease to pass the gavel.
Okay, and I will call the House Finance Committee back to order. Today, the Legislative Finance Division will be presenting an overview of HB 234, which is the governor's supplemental for FY20. We did have this introduced by the administration, and we just wanted to get another perspective from our Ledge Finance Division. So I'd like to invite up to the table Pat Pitney, Director of Legislative Finance, as well as Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Fiscal Analyst, and if you could both put yourselves on the record and fire away.
For the record, Pat Pitney, Director of Legislative Finance.
And Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance.
What we're hoping to do is a short overview and then highlight a few items on the supplemental list, and then answer any questions you have on other items on the list. So with that, we'll get started. So the supplemental request from the governor proposes $270 million in additional unrestricted general fund spending. This differs slightly from the figure of 262 that OMB provided, and that's because we don't account for reappropriations as negative spending. We count them as revenue that's going back to the general fund. So that's the most significant difference. The the overall budget reductions from fiscal year 19 after the supplementals is $216 million. That is largely in the statewide items. Agency appropriations are nearly the same fiscal year 19 to fiscal year 20 due to the fire appropriation. And the big differences are community assistance, the school debt reimbursement, and the change in oil tax credit between 19 and 20. And then, of course, reductions in Hess University and the ferry system that were offset largely by the $100 million fire appropriation. In terms of the deficit, when this body left Juneau after the last budget negotiations were done, the estimated deficit at that time was $157 million. Since that time, which was end of June 2019, there's been a revenue projection change and then these supplemental requests. The deficit projected for the end of fiscal year 20, the one that ends in July 1, 2020, is now $610 million, up from $157 million, if these $270 million supplemental requests are passed. How does that go forward? If you look at the 2020 budget with these supplementals of the governor's proposed plus the governor's FY21 budget, the CBR, which is currently just over $2 billion, at the end of fiscal year 21 would be down to $572 million. My apologies for that typo. It's million, not billion. That would have been really nice.
Problem solved. Is it that easy?
Yeah, exactly. Just put it on the page. Okay. Within the supplemental Governor's supplemental request, there's 52 items totaling $504 million. Again, this total differs slightly based on how we account for reappropriations as well as one federal item that we believe is already accounted for. Of that 504, there's $270 million in unrestricted general fund, 17 in designated general fund, a small amount in other and $215 million in additional federal, and there's a breakdown there with operating and capital. In addition, on the supplemental bill, the governor has presented seven ratifications, totaling $2.4 million. Ratifications are when, after all the accounting closes and all of the federal reimbursements come in, if in a year that has already been closed, so some of these are 2012, 2014, a year that has already closed, if there is a overspending or if there was a particular bill that there was an expectation that the federal government would pay it and they did not pay it, then there's an over expenditure. These ratifications is a request to the body to essentially appropriate state funds to clean those off the books, to make the annual financial statements clean. And so there's seven of these ratifications in this particular bill. Six of them are DOT and one is related to health and social services, MMIs. All of them are relatively old issues.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Concerning the ratifications, if there are some that are from 2012, is there some length of time where they have to be paid, or do they all need to be cleaned up now?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, if they are not paid, they stay open in the accounting system and they stay open as liabilities of the state.
Follow up. But no accounting requirement to have them paid this year?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, it's potential, it could potentially be an audit finding in that they're being ignored.
A follow-up?
Follow-up?
I see the value in cleaning up the books, and I would advocate for that. I'm just trying to understand the requirement versus what would be nice to do. So.
And Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you could go back one slide for me. So in the third bullet point has increased, FY20 estimated deficits increased to $610 million with revenue projection updates. So the question is, we know we had excess spending in Medicaid and fires and things like that. Did we have to adjust revenues down? Did we miss a revenue projection by a fair amount? And was that due to less production or less price? Do we know?
Representative Knopf, through the chair, the fall revenue forecast had adjustments downwards in both price and production, and increase in costs due to increased investment on the North Slope. So all three of those factors result in less revenue this year.
Do we know what the adjustment down from revenue was off the top of your head? Just if not, no big deal. I can find it.
Approximately $250 million, but I can look up the exact number and get back to you.
And please continue.
Okay. I'm on slide four, and the this is our what we call a short fiscal summary. It's kind of puts all of the pertinent information on one sheet of paper. I'd like to bring your attention to a few of the lines. Line nine, the supplemental appropriation in operating budget. Is there a right here? $264 million. And then there's here on line 12, $5.7 million in capital supplemental appropriation requests from the governor. And here's the projected deficit is 610. That's on line 16. And if we move all the way over to the right side on line 18, we see an end of year fiscal year 2020 balance of the CBR is projected to be $2 billion. And then after the governor's FY21 budget request, the end of year balance for fiscal year 21 of the CBR would be $572 million. Those are kind of the high points of this sheet, and I can take any questions.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, if you look at the permanent fund dividend line, which is line 14, it goes from 1.06 in FY20 to 2.005 in 21, a difference of $1 billion. So is it fair to say if we paid in 21 a similar dividend to what we paid in 20, then the balance in the CBR would go up by $1 billion? So instead of 0.5, it would be $1.5 billion?
Through the chair, Representative Bull, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions? We might need some more explanation on that. Ms. Pitney, if you could walk the committee through
so
that again.
So if we look at line 14, we have the under the FY2020 column, we have the amount of funding for the permanent fund dividend at $1,680,000,000. Moving to the FY21 column, the governor's request is $2 billion for the permanent fund dividends. That's the difference between a $1,600 dividend, roughly, and a $3,000 dividend, roughly. The change is, sorry, I'm going to move up here. This difference between the 114 and the explain that. Sorry.
Mr. Painter?
I'm calling a lifeline.
So the amount in line 13 includes the additional royalties for FY20 only. So the kind of straight line comparison would be just the dividend only in line 14 to between FY20 and FY21. So that would be a difference of $936 million between those 2 years.
And just for clarity, on row 15 under the FY20 column where it says the $5 billion, I believe that would be the $4 billion plus that we did for the transfer plus the inflation proofing, which initially was supposed to be $943 million. I think it ended up being $641,000. Is that's the inflation proofing and other deposits? Mr. Painter?
$642 million is the new estimate, yes. But
I say 1,000. Yes. I meant million.
We're having issues with the decimals today. But, yes, so the budgeted number is still $940 million, so that's where that comes from. But it also includes the royalties above the constitutional minimum, which in FY20 we counted that as unrestricted general funds. Starting in FY21, we're counting that as designated general funds, so it doesn't sort of confuse the picture here. So it shows up in the all funds number. That 67.9 is that corresponds to that in FY20.
And I just will restate what Representative Wool was saying just for folks who might be watching on TV. So in FY20, we paid a $1,600 dividend. The cost for that was $1.07 billion, which is on row 14 there. And the governor's proposing to do a almost $3,100 dividend. The total cost for that would be about $2 billion, as I understand that correctly there. And so if you did a flat dividend, which is the $1,600, same as last year, then instead of your CBR being drawn down to $572 million, you would be drawing less down with a smaller PFD, and you'd have a CBR of about $1.5 billion. And I think that's what Representative Wool, did I summarize? And I think that is an important point and worth stating, I guess. So any other comments or questions? Representative Sullivan Leonard and then Johnston.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to recall how we had calculations set for last year's PFD of 1600. And I believe instead of using the 50-50 model, it was more of a percentage of 68-32, 68% going to government, 32 being the payout for the PFD to our residents. And so what I'm seeing then for what the governor is proposing is the true statutory 50-50 plan. And so with that, I mean, that's my comment. But when you look at then at the FY21 ERA for the total, you're still seeing $15.5 billion, are we not? Which is a healthy ERA account. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Sullivan Leonard, we would only have $572 million remaining in the CBR.
No, I'm talking about the ERA, ma'am.
The ERA is actually $15
billion.
And the ERA, although is accessible by the vote of the legislature, the recent POMV value prescribes the percentage that can be used from the POMV, and this assumes that POMV statute, that particular law, is followed.
And Mr. Chairman, and that's, you know, questionable. We've seen it go up and down depending on how much the legislature wants to utilize. For example, last year, again, we saw the difference of a 68-32 split. So even if you follow the POMV model, as the governor is showing here with the 50-50 plan, I'm trying to let you know that we still have a healthy earnings reserve account at $15.5
billion.
And we've got multiple comments. And a couple of things. I see you at the hands here. I've got you all. I did want to just note our meeting today is on the supplemental. We're starting to stray a little bit into the very, very substantive and something that we are going to have to deal with later, the PFD. And this is good. We need to have these discussions and feel free to continue along these lines. I just wanted to remind folks, I think the point of this slide was to show that the $264 million has been plugged into this budget now, whereas before I think it was showing $225 million or $264 million, and so it has changed this. And I will go over to Representative Johnston and then Ortiz.
Yes, thank you, through the chair. I think Ms. Sullivan, Representative Sullivan Leonard, made a point that the ERA actually would grow in 2021, and that is because in the governor's budget, the governor draws down the constitutional budget reserve and doesn't draw down from the earnings reserve account. And so the earning reserve account still is allowed to grow. So as we try to grow our fund, and as we heard from the permanent fund, that we could in 15 years have the fund well over $85 billion, or in 10 years, I think it was. This is the way to grow the fund. My question to you is that I can't remember what the revenue reports put as far as between settlements and earnings for the CBR next year.
Representative Johnston, through the chair, the Department of Revenue projected that settlements would be $75 million and earnings would be, they have a number, but it's essentially 3% of whatever is in the CBR. So if we have a larger CBR, it'd be more combined, about a bit over $100 million.
And with the earnings, we all need to keep in mind that probably even that low amount of 3% with the constitutional budget reserve, if we do, as we look at the balance of the constitutional budget reserve, and as we get the balance low enough that it's only used to run the business of the state as far as a cash management account, then there will be no earnings for the constitutional budget reserve.
Representative LeBond.
And since we're on, thank you, Mr. Chairman, since we're on that lower right-hand box looking at the CBR and ERA, the earnings reserve account, the SBR is also shown as having a zero balance in it. And just to remind the committee and the listening audience that the SBR was tapped into a zero amount to prop up the PFD amount last year.
Mm-hmm. And Representative LeBond, that's a good point. Because I think at one point, I don't know if either of you happen to recall what the high water mark was in terms of what the SBR had gotten up to. And as of this last year, we used the remaining $172 million of that. But at one point, that was as large as Ms. Pitney.
On slide six, we have the both the statutory budget reserve amounts and the constitutional budget reserves amount. We had a peak in the SBR, and the CBR, or the SBR peak was in 13 and 14, or 12 and 13, fiscal year 12 and 13, these larger green bars. This is the statutory budget reserve. And then the CBR peaked in fiscal year 14. And this large drop in fiscal year 15 actually was a deposit into the retirement fund to shore up the retirement liability.
It is very much snowing out there right now. It's just a skier's delight today. Representative Carpenter?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A while back, this body decided to consider the permanent fund dividend as an expense of the government, whereby before it was not. So that we need to remember that we've made it an expense of the government, and when we say a certain amount of money coming out of one account or another was spent to pay for the dividend, that may be partially technically accurate, but it is more accurate to state that we spent money on all of our expenses of the state government with that money, not just paying the permanent fund dividend. If we were to not use the permanent fund dividend as an expense of the government and it just came out by statute like it is done historically, then we would not be able to say that that money was used to pay for the permanent fund dividend because it's not something we chose to do. It just happened. So for the audience that's watching, the decision to pay any amount of money from any fund to pay for the dividend is no different than paying for money, paying for expenses out of education or health and social services or the ferry system or whatever. It's all the same. It's all the same expense, just a line item expense for the government. We can't accurately say the money that was drawn down from one account specifically went to pay for the PFD. That is not an accurate statement.
Thank you, Representative Carpenter. Representative Johnston?
Yes, that is true. And actually, we are discussing a supplemental where there was attempts to cut the budget because we now have we have two major revenue sources, the percent of market value, structured draw, and for the most part, our oil and gas and mineral revenues. And last year, there was a large attempt to use the revenues from the structured draw to pay a larger dividend. And as we see, even with the cuts that were made in the budget last year, we are coming back now and discussing a very large supplemental appropriation. And I just, for the listening audience, I just want everybody to be aware the governor has brought to us a very large supplemental budget because of the needs of the state that he needed to meet and couldn't meet with the budget that passed. Thank you.
Ortiz? Any further questions or comments? Seeing none, Ms. Pitney?
So this is just a graphical representation of the use of the CBR and the SBR reserves over time and shows the estimate for fiscal year 20 and fiscal year 21 that we discussed on the prior slide. Rather than, I can go backwards, but this is just pictorial of the spending over time. So the green represents the revenue we get from our oil, corporate income tax, other unrestricted general fund taxes. The gray bar is the revenue now from the percent of market value earnings reserve draw. The 5.25% dropping soon to a 5% draw. This pink bar at the bottom is the deficit, and this was the $157 million deficit projected at the in July when people left, and this is the $610 million deficit. This is the projected $1.5 billion deficit for fiscal year 21. And then the blue bar represents agency spend, and you can see where the agency spend has come very close to fiscal year 19. Statewide items, capital budget, and the dividend.
Representative LeBon and then Johnston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And your projection on that far right bar takes into account a price of oil and a throughput of what level and amount, or do you have that information?
Representative LeBon, through the chair, the price forecast for FY21 is $59 per barrel. I don't remember the exact production figure off the top of my head.
And could you update the committee on where the price of oil is today?
I believe my email was in the mid-50s.
Representative Johnston and then Josephson.
Yes, through the chair, I think, could you just give a brief description what's included in the statewide operation cost?
So the statewide through the chair, Jennifer, through the chair, Representative Johnston, the statewide operations includes what we would call non-agency expenditures. So the majority of that for fiscal year 20 is the retirement liability payment and in the order of $330 million. What's not in there for 20 but has been there in the past years was oil tax credits. What's not in there in 20 that was in past years was community assistance and the REAA school funding. So it's those things that are stretched statewide, they're operating in nature, but don't land in a particular agency. And I think I covered the major ones.
So follow up, one of the larger parts of that is our unfunded liability and our cost of retirement system. And that is something that we have no control over. Is that correct?
Ms. Pitney?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, the retirement liability is viewed as a debt to the state of Alaska, and also included in those statewide operations is our general obligation bond debt. And so it is viewed very clearly by crediting agencies as a debt of the state.
So just a quick follow-up. So the full faith and credit of the state is behind it.
Is behind those payments.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you, through the chair. Ms. Pitney, just to be clear, the gray background, if this chart moved to the left to 1982, you'd still see a stripe which reflected PFD payments out of the ERA. Is that right? So the gray background widens because of SB 26 and the POMB.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes, the increase in fiscal year 19 of the gray bar was due to the passage of the POMV SB 26 at the time, that particular law.
Follow up.
Thank you. On this topic of retirement, just for the viewing audience and just so I'd like to sort of hammer this home. The retirement debt is of the sort that a court would likely compel us to sell this building before we could ignore it. I mean, a retired senator said we'd have to sell the mansion before we could say we're not paying this retirement debt. Is that your sense of the intensity and seriousness of that debt?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, the retirement benefits are constitutionally guaranteed, so it would eventually come down to the state having to pay those liabilities.
Further questions? Please continue.
So one topic that is important to note is over the past several years, since we began drawing on the constitutional budget reserve to fund government, so starting in about 2015, there's been a provision for access to use the CBR and the constitutional budget reserve. The constitutional budget reserve, as you know, requires a 3/4 vote, and in order to make the supplemental process seamless, starting in about fiscal year 2016, there was a provision that's termed headroom that's put in a budget bill that when the 3/4 vote happens, it allows for some amount of supplemental appropriations to come out without an additional CBR vote. In fiscal year 20, the budget language passed by this body included a $250 million CBR headroom limit. In terms of the supplementals that have been passed, the headroom at $250 million, the governor's supplementals is $270 million. This particular supplemental, or this particular chart only shows the $270 million is only the supplementals requested by the governor. Those exceed the available headroom by $20 million.
While we're on this concept of the CVR, I've noticed over the years there's a lot of confusion between what the CVR does versus what deficit filling language is. And CBR is to cover a shortfall in a budgeted appropriation. So, for example, Medicaid, you budget $100 million of the appropriation. We actually end up needing to spend $120. So to cover that shortfall, you've got the CBR that would allow you to do that versus, and correct me if I'm wrong with my understanding of this, but deficit filling language is not to cover a shortfall in the budgeted appropriation. It's to cover a shortfall in revenue. So if our oil goes from $100 per barrel down to $50 a barrel, we've got a budget out there that we still need to pay for, and so the deficit filling language would cover that. Do I have that correct?
Mr. Chairman, in a typical year, the CBR language will accomplish both things. So in the FY20 budget, the CBR language provided that if there is a gap between revenue and expenditures based on the enacted budget, that gap would be made up by the CBR. In addition, if additional appropriations were needed for supplementals, then that one CBR vote that you all took last summer would cover up to $250 million that was not in the appropriation bills named in that CBR vote. So it still requires another appropriation to access that $250 million, but it would, you would not need another CBR vote for it. But that deficit filling language is either for a planned deficit that we know will be short, and when we pass the budget in FY20, we expect it to be short, and so, or an unexpected shortfall if revenue did decline below our projections. That would be filled with the deficit filling language.
So deficit filling language, part of that is the revenue aspect of it. And going back to what you said a second ago, which was, it'll come back to me in a second here. Any questions, comments? Oh, I know, I just wanted to say, I think one of the things you mentioned in there is you've got the CBR vote, it's a three-quarter vote. So we had $250 million in headroom last year. And I think most years it's around $100 million. But because we weren't sure that the Medicaid cuts that were being proposed could be gotten, the reason for us having a much bigger headroom number last year is because we were not confident that those numbers could be achieved. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure the reason for that. That was a deliberation of this body and the other body, and I can't speculate on your reasons.
Thank you, and I can tell you that was certainly my reasoning. Representative Wool?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe I just missed something. It looks like the supplemental's 270 at this point, and you have a CBR ending balance of $2 billion. If you take out that 270 from $2 billion, your ending one is half a million, but that's the $1 billion difference in the permanent fund between 20 and 21. So we already said that if you stayed at the 20 level, then it would be $1.5 billion in the CBR. Where's the other $230 million? I know I missed it somewhere. Does that make sense, my question?
Through the chair, Representative Wool, the fortunate thing is the CBR balance is large enough that there's earnings.
Okay.
And all settlements for oil tax disputes are deposited into the CBR. Together, those account for that difference.
Follow up. So the CBR balance, at the same time it's being drawn down, it's being grown to offset the math there. Okay.
Through the chair, Representative Wool, that's true.
Other questions? Please continue.
So getting into the particular items on the governor's supplemental request, when OMB presented here roughly a week ago, they provided a particular set of urgent needs, and Medicaid is the most urgent. The Medicaid funding available today is projected to run out towards the end of March. I think they provided a day of like March 23rd. Without supplemental, they'd have to postpone provider payments. Providers will behave differently in that manner. Hoping to get their payments may speed up their billing. That date could get shorter. This Medicaid covers both the regular Medicaid reduction that was put forward as well as the adult dental. Then, of course, the fire suppression. One note on the fire suppression, that this includes the costs of fighting the fires through last summer and fall, and the projection of $16 million for what they expect a normal spring fire season to be. Then $158,000 for work they've already done on the Dalton Highway. The $2 million for the Kinnick Goose Bay Road. And this $2 million is actually in a project. They need to change the milepost markings of the project to allow spending of the money. Earthquake relief, there were projects that were done with the expectation that insurance or the federal government would pay the bill. This is $3 million of work that's been done that will not be reimbursed either by the feds or through insurance claims. And then the last item is a reappropriation of funding that exists for a mass notification. Those are the ones that OMB said were more urgent than others. And after this, we'll address this spreadsheet and talk about a few items on the spreadsheet and answer any questions that any of you have on the spreadsheet.
Okay, and got a whole bunch of hands going up here. I just want to reiterate the purpose of wanting to bring this before us today, as we do have public testimony tomorrow. So I wanted to kind of refresh everybody's memories on what was in the supplemental. At this point, we haven't decided whether or not we're doing this sooner or later, so I didn't want anybody to think that we're moving on this really fast, and that's why we're having public testimony. That decision hasn't been made yet, so I just wanted to let folks know for now. So with that, and I'm going to have to step out for a meeting here in a few minutes, but questions I've got in the queue, Representative Ortiz, Josephson, Johnston, Knopp, and Representative Tilton. And so Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Under the category of urgent, you explained the Medicaid situation, fire suppression. My question is on the Northern Highways, Dalton Highway, Adigan Pass, and then the Nick Goose Bay Road, what makes the payments of those two amounts urgent as opposed to falling under the regular category of supplemental?
Representative Ortiz, through the chair, the first item is urgent because the work has already been done, so we've already spent the money, okay. And so it is time sensitive to actually have an appropriation to make sure that unit that spent that doesn't have to reduce its operations to meet the budget for the rest of the year. The scope change, I am not sure, and OMB may be able to answer that question. I'm not sure of the time sensitive nature, although I believe there were some earthquake damages that influenced it to that.
Representative Tilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to speak to the Kinnick Goose Bay Road $2 million reappropriation scope change. We have a situation where we have had several fatalities on that road, and some of those fatalities are due to the maintenance of the road with ruts that are pushing the drivers into the other lane. They are deeper than whatever the inches are that they look at as far as standards, and as a community, we were looking for a way to help DOT with maintenance dollars, and we had recalled that this $2 million had been approved and put towards another project out on the on the Kinnick-Goose Bay roads a few years back, and that's the Settlers Bay to Vine portion, but the maintenance is needed in the mile 1.5 to 7 area, and so the urgency is that we have experienced fatalities, and one actually very recently, and another, and several incidents that would cause close to death experiences. So that is the urgency, and it is just a scope change. The dollar, we're not, you know, it's not asking for additional dollars. The dollar is already there.
Thank you for that clarification. I appreciate it very much.
And go ahead.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Two different questions. The first is, what would happen, Ms. Pitney, through the chair, if the $16 million for the spring fire supplemental were delayed until, for example, the operating budget itself or some later time?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, the fire division has provisions to fight fires that arise, which is why we're faced with a $100 million supplemental, of which $80 million is already spent. So they would continue to fight fires and until such time as it comes up. And the worst case scenario, it becomes a ratification, and there have been ratifications for fire seasons in the past.
Okay. Follow up?
Actually, new topic. Through the chair, Ms. Pitney, is there such a thing as a negative supplemental? That is, if a member of the legislature identified an existing FY20 appropriation that he or she deemed unnecessary and wanted to present to the body or bodies, is there a culture that permits such a thing?
Representative Josephson, through the chair, yes, negative supplementals were extremely common a few years ago when we had a lot of increments to the budget. We often would go back through and the following year reduce some of those amounts if position hiring was delayed and things like that. So that is a thing that is quite common.
Thank you.
Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So in the earthquake relief, federally ineligible items, $3 million. Is that true? So will them funds be dispersed through a disaster declaration, or is it two repairs that we... So I'm trying to understand, if it's federally ineligible, that typically applies to, you know, federal relief, but our road, our state infrastructure necessarily isn't always eligible. So is it to be dispersed through... be dispersed to communities through a disaster declaration, or exactly what's the $3 million targeted for?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, these particular items are directly related to DOT work on state property. So it isn't money that was used in communities with that expectation of federal.
Just a quick follow-up.
Follow-up.
So would DOT have a list of ineligible projects that we would see?
Representative Knopf, through the chair, I believe they have a list. I do not have it in front of me, but we can provide that.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Representative Telton. Okay. Representative Wall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, I was to follow up on Representative Josephson's question about the fire suppression, what would happen for about the spring expenditures. I thought that was a preventative measure, not a firefighting measure, but more about creating more fire breaks in anticipation of a fire season so it would reduce damage. So it wasn't exactly money for fighting fires. Is that correct?
Representative Wolf, through the chair, this is to the fire suppression activity allocation, which can only be used for the cost of fighting fires. There's a separate fire prevention allocation that this does not address. So this is just the cost of actually fighting the fires in the spring. The governor is not requesting any additional preventative measures money.
Follow up?
Okay, thank you for the clarification. So this is to fight fires that haven't happened yet, whereas I know there's past fire that we're still, that we have to pay for that comes out of our supplemental. And is there also future fire this coming spring, correct?
Representative Bull through the chair, right. So $94.5 million of this has already been spent,
right,
above the amount that was in the budget, and the other $16 million is for future fires expected this spring.
Okay. Follow up.
Follow up.
So it's not for prevention. That's a separate fund. It's just for fires if they come up. Whereas what happened last year, fires came up and we still haven't paid for them. So we can get behind in fire suppression payment, although you don't want to do that with this remaining $16 million. Is that correct?
Representative, through the chair, in FY19, we did not fully fund the amount of fires that we turned out to have. We will expect a ratification somewhere around $30 million because of that. So we can just ignore it and the governor declares a disaster, but it's certainly preferable to put that expected money in the budget.
I agree. Thank you.
Representative Merrick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just clarification for Representative Wohl. Representative Hopkins offered an amendment for $5 million in the DNR subcommittee, and that money is to be used for fire breaks, fire suppression, those kind of things.
I actually had a couple of questions. One is a follow-up to the fire suppression. If I remember correctly, and this might be unfair to ask other people to remember, but in past years we have looked at a $50 million supplemental, and mainly for fires because that was coming into what was then the norm. And this is the first year that we have this large of a supplemental for fires. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, this would be our most expensive fire season on record, yes.
Thank you. And I forgot my other question, so I guess it wasn't very important. Please proceed.
So I'm switching to the full supplemental list, and I'm just going to highlight a couple of items that we see a change in what the governor requested, or just to bring to your attention items that you might not be aware of. So on item number two, the adult preventative dental in the Medicaid program, the governor's request included both unrestricted general fund and federal funds. In the budget process last year, the federal funds were already appropriated, so we would suggest not including the federal funds, the additional federal funds, because that would be essentially a double counting on the federal funds. Number three we've covered, that's the fire supplemental and the $16 million. And I don't have anything of significant note on page two, but if there are questions from the committee before I jump past page two.
Back to page one. So are you saying that under line two, the $18,730,000 is not available, or it's not needed, or shouldn't be there? Is that what you're saying?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, that is correct, because it was already, the federal portion exists in the fiscal year 20 budget already. Okay. For that. Okay. Unrestricted general fund portion of the adult dental was vetoed by the governor. The federal money remained.
Representative Sullivan Leonard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for a quick clarification on that then, is that time sensitive as well as item number one is, where it's due by, March 23rd? Or is that something that could wait until the budget cycle at the end of June?
So through the chair, Representative Sullivan Leonard, the program was reinstated by the governor. The funding is being spent collectively. The Medicaid program does not have money after the end of March, is our current projection.
Okay.
So that's inclusive of that, yes.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Moving to page two.
Yes, there's been some questions as far as the Anchorage office of the DMV, the move, and the time sensitivity of that. Do we know when that lease is over?
Chair Johnson, I do not know off. I can get that to you, but my understanding is that their rent is going up very soon, so they want to get that move started
right. And
get the date.
A date would be helpful. Thank you. Representative Sullivan Leonard. If OMB would like, if you have an answer to that question, if you'd like to come up to the table, that would be helpful.
For the record, Neil Steinger, Director, Office of Management and Budget. Could you repeat the question, please?
The question was the time sensitivity of the DMV office move in Anchorage when the lease is up.
Chair Johnson, I'm not sure the exact date that the lease is up. However, that wasn't included as a more urgent item, as the department has the ability to kind of manage cash flow, manage their funds through to the date that we would expect a sort of standard timeline supplemental to pass. So the need for that additional authority isn't necessarily as urgent, just from a kind of cash flow perspective.
Okay, thank you. Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Painter, I hate to beat a dead horse, but in regards to the urgency of the funding for fire suppression for the spring season, is it $16 million, I think it is? So that's really based on what we've, on a historical average, which is 4-year or 10-year. We're trying to replenish funds based on historical average for spring firefighting. And so I'm kind of questioning the sense of urgency in that. Do I have that correct, or we're below that historical line that we typically spend?
Through the chair, Representative Knopf, the $16 million represents, I believe, a 5-year average of the spring costs for firefighting.
So do we know what's in there today?
Representative Knopf, through the chair, currently we're overspent by the $94.5 million that's already been spent without an appropriation, so there is negative $94.5 million in there today. We could bring it up just to what we've already spent.
To zero.
So, but assuming there will be at least some fires starting when the fire season kicks off, there would be no funding available.
And that just carries us over until the start of the new fiscal year then, July 1. Is that correct?
Representative Knopf, through the chair, if it resets, so if we didn't appropriate that money, it would be a very large ratification. Because there is a statute that delegates the authority to the governor that if there's a fire emergency, we can continue fighting fires. We don't have to stop because of the lack of appropriations. So,
okay, fair enough. Thank you.
And just in follow-up to this, as far as this historically, has been a balance left in the fund. And last year in our conversations, there was, I think, a balance, and we do not have one this year. Is that accurate?
Chair Johnson, in FY19, we were overspent in fire suppression by about $30 million.
Well, then
FY18, I believe we had a lapse. That was one of the few. Or no, FY18, we also had a ratification. FY17 was the last year that we had a lapse.
So the moral to that story is don't depend on my memory.
Madam Chair.
Representative Wall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Referring to the negative $94 million in the account right now, I'm just curious, how did you pay everybody last year for fire suppression? Where'd that $95 million, I'm sure you moved it around, obviously not from the CBR, so I'm just curious how that works.
Representative Wall, through the chair, it it did come from the CBR because it's part of our deficit. There has not been an appropriation yet, but the statutory language allows the governor to continue spending general funds to protect life, health, and safety on fire suppression, even if there's not enough funds appropriated for that purpose.
Thank you for that clarification.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, just out of curiosity, does the governor have to formally make an announcement to that effect? Or can he, I'm just curious, almost as an academic matter, or does he just simply do it?
Representative Josephson, through the chair, don't have the statute in front of me. My recollection is that he has to declare an emergency and notify the presiding officers of the legislature, but I can get the exact procedure back to you.
Thank you. Can you?
So, I don't have any particular notes of interest on page 2. On page 3, I do want to note that public safety has several requests. They have 5 items of supplemental requests for public safety plus a related item in DOT for additional trooper vehicles. And if you look down on line 16, it's a $4.3 million supplemental with general funds, and that is one of several items 16, 17, 18, 25, and 26 are the items. So significant public safety items in the supplemental. And on page 4, line 21, bring to your attention a supplemental for the Marine Highway System at $7,050,000. This is one of 2 Marine Highway supplementals. There's another supplemental, number 27, that's in capital. These Marine Highway supplementals do not add service to the current schedule. This is covering the shortfall of the existing service and trying to get as close as possible to the service weeks of service already committed to. So this does not add to service of the ferry system. It just makes up for the shortfall in the current operation at DOT. So I'm now on, I'll go a little bit slower. If there's questions on page 5, 27, item number 27 is the second Marine Highway request at $5 million for capital. Moving on to page 6, I want to bring to your attention a supplemental request for the Department of Corrections. There is a billing agreement between the state and the federal government to cover federal prisoners in Alaska state prisons. That money is in a segregated account, but the legislature appropriates that money. There was more collections than the legislature appropriated for federal. They want to take those prior year collections and use them as a supplemental. The primary use of that supplemental is to cover inmate health care. There are several changes going on in the Department of Corrections analyses, given the time change of opening Palmer and how they'll manage prisons. I just bring to your attention this is $8 million in additional spend primarily for health care, and to be aware that it is not fully represented in the fiscal year 21 budget for inmate health care. So it's just, it's an awareness. It is a item that, you know, look holistically at the corrections budget.
To that point, just so I understand this correctly, this was federal receipts that we received in other years. So it could be, it should be maybe considered as a one-time only, first of all, amount of money coming to us. Secondly, I guess my concern, and I maybe would need OMB up here to address this, is this something that will survive an audit? Would you like to come up from OMB?
Again, for the record, Neil Steinger, Director, Office of Management and Budget. The federal mandate collections in Department of Corrections are meant to cover all costs associated with housing a federal inmate. So included in that cost isn't just that kind of direct cost on a day-to-day basis, but also a small portion of that is intended to be covering maintenance of the facilities or, you know, kind of just any cost associated with running the facilities and housing that inmate. So, you know, overhead, maintenance, longer-term costs. So it's not necessarily, you know, I think it's roughly $80 a day. It's not necessarily that they think $80 is spent in that day. You know, there's some acknowledgement that some of those costs may come up at a later date. So the Department of Corrections is confident that they can use these revenues for this purpose.
And just in follow-up to that, has the Department of Corrections or OMB looked at this as far as, because healthcare costs is something that does not go away, come one year and go away the next year. Have you looked at this as do you have other funds that you're planning to use in later years, or also have you looked at this as a one-time only source of funding, and is there any other place? I have concerns.
Yes, Chair Johnson. That's understandable because this is clearly a one-time pot of money and excess that's built up over several years being used in the supplemental. In the FY21 budget, we're looking at how, you know, what the fund sources are that can be used to fund the correctional system, you know, at the level that needs to be funded with, you know, more sustainable fund sources and not utilizing, you know, one-time funds for long-term needs. But in order to meet this, you know, one-time supplemental need in FY20, we felt it was appropriate. You know, that would be an appropriate use of a one-time, you know, bucket of money.
And just in follow-up to that, so since this is only going to be used for FY20, not for FY21, does that mean that we've had an increased need in healthcare and in our corrections, or we just had underfunded or underbudgeted the healthcare cost?
Chair Johnston, I think I'd probably have to defer that question to the department. My understanding on the use of this supplemental was more for more diverse needs within the correctional system than simply inmate health care.
Okay. I'm just reading the budget language, so thank you very much. Any other questions?
There are most other supplementals are, each needs analysis, but there's nothing in particular to bring out on any of them beyond what you can read on the listing. And so I am jumping to, unless there are questions, I'm going to jump to the page 9 and just point out the ratifications so you have, since we talked about it at the beginning, you have an idea of what those are. I mean, how they show up. So items 45 to 51 are the ratifications. And so the Department of Transportation items, there's ratifications from fiscal year 10 to fiscal year 17. And they're all have to do with after final accounting on federal emergency projects, what was finally covered by the federal government and what remained in the project cost. And then the last one is resulting from a 2007 appropriation for the MMIS system in terms of final accounting closed with CMS. This is the final accounting of what would be accepted by the feds and what's left in that accounting.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, Ms. Pitney, just a couple last questions. On page 6, I'm curious about how it is that not that many years ago, the Palmer Correctional Center closed, and the moment it closed, I'm assuming it was acceptable as a capital or as a facility, and now it's not. What do you have any understanding of that?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, so it's actually a different line item, and I'm not finding it. It's line number 30. All right, okay, right below it, of course. So there was money appropriated from this body to open the facility back up. There were known deferred maintenance issues when it closed. So there was money appropriated by this body sequestered for that purpose only. With the delay and actually beginning to work on reopening the Palmer facility, that appropriation needs to be moved into the next fiscal year to accomplish it. As they've begun to study the issues that are needed, their estimate is higher than the amount appropriated last year. So,
follow up?
I'm assuming through the chair, Ms. Pitney, that that if the item is not a one-time item, it's typical, again, sort of legislative culture, mm-hmm. to move it into the base of the overall budget. But that's, I assume, it's logical, certainly, but that's at our discretion. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, that is the discretion of the body.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. If you could go to page 2 of 9, down at the bottom, the Alaska Pioneer Homes Assistance. It says, add authority to meet the mission of serving elders regardless of the ability to pay based on the new rate structure that was implemented. Can you recall, or do you have at your disposal, what the original amount of money that was in the FY20 budget, how much was set aside for payment assistance? So how much of this $1 million, how much of an increase, what percentage of an increase is that?
So through the chair, I'm going to ask for a lifeline, and Kelly Cunningham, who is our HESS analyst, will answer that question.
For the record, Kelly Cunningham, Legislative Finance. Could you please repeat the question?
Yes. The question is, looking at number 10 or item 10 having to do with Alaska Pioneer Homes payment assistance, it's asking for a $1 million supplemental appropriation to meet the mission of serving elders regardless of the ability to pay based on the new rate structure that was implemented in September 1st of 2019. My question is, do you have at your disposal how much money was put aside in the original budget for payment assistance? So what I'm trying to get at is how much of an increase percentage-wise is this need for a million more dollars?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, the FY20 budget included $25.9 million UGF for payment assistance.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Telton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If we go back to the ratifications, I'm just a little curious on item number, line number 49. We don't really have any detail on these or understanding what projects they were from, and the only reason it just kind of steps out is because it's $1.2 million, and that's kind of a large amount. Just wondering if we know what that project was.
Would we like OMB to come up and? No, no. Okay.
Representative Tilton, through the chair, we'll get back to you.
Are there any other questions? Representative Carpenter.
I don't have any questions for our guests here, but I am curious when this bill is amendable.
Well, we're going to have we're having a public hearing on it tomorrow. And actually, I at this point can't tell you because we have not decided what we're doing. A lot of things are up in the air on the supplemental. But we will be having a public hearing on it tomorrow. And we will let you know as soon as we have an answer for that.
Okay, thank you.
As we do with all amendments. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Pitney and Mr. Painter. Our next meeting is scheduled for tomorrow, February 14th at 1:30 p.m. At that meeting, we'll hear public testimony on HB 234, the Governor's Supplemental for FY20. With that, this meeting is adjourned at 2:55 p.m.